Donnie Chedrick with you live from Sharky's in Latrobe. Stop in, cool down with an ice cold Miller Lite. Training camp coverage on 93.7 The Fan is presented by Smale Kia in Greensburg and brought to you by Miller Lite, Schley Deck, and New Flow Men's Health. And on that fan hotline that we mentioned is our pal Brian Batko, live and in person here at Sharky's in Latrobe, sporting a very festive shirt to my liking, and I'm sure to the liking of Charlie Borges back behind the glass in Green Tree. Charlie, I wish you were here to see it. I'm sorry that you're not. It is like an animated Hell in a Cell, Mankind, and Undertaker shirt, and Brian shared with us, Charlie, that he attended the iconic Hell in a Cell match at King of the Ring 1998.
I'd put that in my resume. I mean, I understand you guys are out there having fun, and I'm here by myself just staring at buttons, but I'm very jealous that you get to see this, what looks like to be an iconic shirt. I can't even see it.
I was in the second row, actually, Charlie. My dad and I had great seats. I still have the chair from it, and I actually could find a photo for you. You can kind of see a young 6 or 7 year old Brian Batko looking up at one Mick Foley. So it is a it is a part of my lore, I suppose. I would say, even though I no longer watch wrestling, but when I had a chance to get this shirt from Homage a few years back, I jumped all over it. And I'll say this, to bring it back to Steelers camp, as I told Donnie on the hot field at St. Vincent College, I would be changing my shirt for this appearance tonight because I was completely drenched in sweat.
You were. I actually related to you a lot in that moment because that's the type of problem I run into quite often, Brian. And you are a much slender guy than I, but, I mean, still, man, it was what, like 101 on the field?
Yeah, I think that
apparently
was the heat index. And Donnie, like, this is my seventh Steelers training camp, but only fifth in Latrobe because of the 2 years at Acrisure and the South Side. I don't remember a practice where I felt that hot. I mean, my hat was soaked in sweat. I had to swap that out as well. Maybe I have been, you know, that, I guess, down from the heat at a Steelers practice and just memory hold it because it was not a good time, but recency bias being what it is and all, that's the hottest I can remember being today. That was stifling.
And I have to say I am thankful of the folks here at Sharky's for putting me where they put me because as nice as it is out on the pier at Sharky's, which is like the connected outdoor space here.
Tropical vibes.
Yeah, I didn't want to feel that heat for the rest of the night. Like I wanted to be in the air conditioning. I wanted to be away from all of that.
We're in the OG side of Sharky's Cafe. So.
And you were in here yesterday.
I've been here many times. You know, I go back, my brother-in-law coached at St. Vincent. So this was like, you know, the couple times that we were able to make it up to a game. This would be the post-game spot. So, yeah, I love Sharky's. And I've been coming here even longer than I've been coming to Steelers training camp as a beat writer. So, yeah, pumped to be here. And you know, for Sharky's, when T.J. Watt did his first interview after signing his big new deal, he gave Sharky's a little pop.
He did.
I mean, that was – business is booming at Sharky's. When T.J. Watt shouts out one Latrobe establishment and he picks the Shark, I mean, that was nice.
And I mentioned to you that I had a funny story about the pier, and I didn't know if I – wanted to tell it on air. I forget if I told it on air with Pony the other day, but it doesn't really matter. But it was New Year's Eve 1 year. I was freshly 21, so this is probably New Year's Eve 2016. And I'm from this area. I'm from Greensburg. I grew up in a little town that is less than 10 miles from where we're sitting right now. I had multiple good buddies that went to school at St. Vincent. They had a house off campus, so we're all home for break. He said, hey, New Year's Eve, it's a Saturday, let's go to the pier. They have all-you-can-drink mimosas for $10. And I don't know if they still do that deal, and if they don't, we are probably some of the reasons why.
Things got a little unruly.
That was a long afternoon.
A little rowdy.
That was
ringing in the new year.
There were 20-plus put down, I think, by each guy. I mean, and I mean, I have buddies that are similar stature to me, and remember, I was even bigger back in 2016, so
yeah.
some damage was done.
Yeah, it sounds like it, and, you know, when TJ mentioned Sharkies, he said, you know, he'd probably see all of us in the media for drinks. I don't ever recall seeing TJ here. If you'd ever like to actually follow through on that promise, you know, I'm all ears, TJ. Let me know when and where to meet you, and we'll definitely make that happen on your tap.
I would say 7:30 on Wednesday, July 30th, 2025 would sound pretty good. If he wants to hop up here in the next couple of minutes, that would be good. But, yes, this is a very good local watering hole for folks that come out to St. Vincent both for camp or if they are natives of the area. But, Brian, let's talk a little Steelers. The first padded practice today. One of the big highlights, I believe, in the seven shots drill, was that the big highlight play, corner of the end zone, Aaron Rodgers, DK Metcalf, that got a big pop from the crowd.
Yeah, I'd say that was, you know, maybe the highlight of camp so far for those two guys. I mean, they connected on one on, I think, the second day of practice, maybe, after they got the botched snaps and interception to Patrick Queen out of the way on opening day. But, yeah, I mean, today, basically the way they're doing that drill now, Donnie, is, you know, the offense and defense go at it. After two or three, the backups get in there and they go at it. There always seems to be a level of amateur officiating from, like, the assistant coaches or scouts or you know, team development staffers who allow for it to be tied going into the seventh and final shot, and then the starters come out, you know, for your big shot, Bob, game seven. And Aaron Rodgers won the day on this one. I mean, dropping a dime to DK in the back left corner of the end zone. Darius Slay was in coverage, but Slay's feisty. He ain't 6'4", 230. DK Metcalf high-pointed that thing. Little toe tap in. He was in. It was right in front of me. And, yeah, the crowd went wild.
Did you sense a little extra buzz there today, probably due to the Pat McAfee following?
I think that was part of it. And just, yeah, I mean, with yesterday getting washed out, that was much anticipated first day in pads. So maybe there were people who made the pilgrimage Tuesday and were like, well, that was a bust. We got to come back tomorrow. So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people were circling this day, you know, to begin with. And there were a lot of cars lined up on the side of the road. GPS actually took me through. I don't think it was the hamlet you grew up in, Donnie, but I was certainly going down some Westmoreland County back roads.
Where were they taking you through?
Walton T. Room Road. Have you ever heard of that?
I'm sure I've been on it, but
I was in the cut deep in Hempfield, you know, so that.
Okay,
that
over that way.
Yeah,
see,
I
grew up in
right.
New Alexandria, the other direction.
Yeah, on the right side if you're on 30 East coming out here. They rerouted me and then I got back on. But, yeah, I mean, that just tells you how much traffic there was getting out here today and how much buzz there was for the boys and pads.
See, isn't it backed up like that pretty often, though? I mean, now even more so today, but I feel like, I mean, the first day is always big.
Yeah.
Would you say today was more than that?
Yes, especially because the first day was also a weekday. This was like a weekend crowd for Steelers training camp on a weekday. And I think that was reflected in a lot of things. You know, Steelers PR staffers were running all over the place with, you know, national outlets here. And, you know, they had a DJ. The team had a DJ under the tent. That's usually reserved for the bigger weekend crowds. So the, you know, the tunes were bumping even during their team periods. Yeah, I mean, it was a festive, raucous atmosphere, and the sound of pads popping only added to it.
I was going to mention their trip here because you brought up the traffic, and that immediately popped into my head. So I get a text from our guy T-Bird here, our main engineer, that kind of put me into a semi-panic around 4:30 when he said, there's a car on fire on 376. We are behind it. We haven't moved in several minutes. The GPS currently says 535, and it's continuing to get worse.
T-Bird can't just fly over?
He sends me a video, and it was a van that was on fire.
Jeez.
That was aflame. So, of course, me thinking, all right, well, now what's going to happen? I ask him, what are we going to do if you're not here by 6? And he said, I don't know, have never been in this situation. That didn't make
At least he was honest. He didn't try to, like, you know, beat around the bush or, like, you know, soothe your concerns. It's just like, I don't know. I hope I'm here.
Fortunately, once they got past that, they were in pretty good shape.
T-Bird
spread
his wings and flew.
They got here in plenty of time to set things up. No Broderick Jones for majority of the day.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Tomlin made it sound like he was going to be back out there when we heard from him yesterday. He was back out there, but he didn't do the team drills. Tomlin said again today that he is working his way back, so they're probably being safe with him when it's one of those soft tissue deals. And, I mean, it doesn't minimize that this is a big camp for Jones, and he kind of needs every day of development that he can get. But I don't think this is going to be a long-term lingering thing. But, you know, you are starting to get to a point with him where it's always something.
And how much concern is there? Like, I mean, this is a career-altering year for him. I mean, if he doesn't get it going this year, this could perhaps be it.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll certainly really tell his tale in a Steelers uniform, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to make the fifth-year option decision on him next spring. And, you know, with Jones, he seems to be doing and saying all the right things as far as controlling what he can control. You know, he told me he was 305 when he got to camp, and that, you know, he'd probably be sweating it out and getting even under that, which is entirely possible given the heat that we were talking about earlier. Said he was, you know, he didn't really want to delve into specifics on changing his diet or conditioning, but he said he slowed down on some stuff. And I was like, bad stuff? And he's like, yeah, bad stuff. So I don't know. I mean, maybe less carbs, less sweets, whatever. At least it shows you that he's taking his game more seriously, and maybe he's maturing a little bit going into, like you said, this pivotal season from him. But all that stuff is window dressing if you can't block the guy in front of you and have the right technique, have enough punch and power to be that premier left tackle.
Yeah, I mean, this is also the first time I feel like I've ever heard that an offensive lineman is getting criticized for losing too much weight.
I don't know that he's getting criticized for it. He does look slender, and, you know, I think that's good if you're going to be quick and able to move laterally a lot better than you were before. With somebody like him, I'd rather him err on the side of, okay, I'm moving around well, I'm not sloppy, I'm not struggling to get through practices in the heat. But, yeah, I mean, you still need to be able to stand up to some of the best edge rushers in the league. I just saw Trey Hendrickson on the screen behind me, which, have you ever seen that guy, Donnie? He looks like Mason Rudolph fell into a vat of radioactive goo and put on 100 pounds. But
they are kind of cut from like that 1980s
bully
villain cloth. Yeah,
1980s movie.
Like nice
bully,
haircut, looks 100%. Like a rich kid. Yeah,
yeah. So, I mean, that guy is going to be coming at him if they ever get this contract figured out in Cincinnati. And we know Mr. 95 in Cleveland is always going to be lining up on that, or not always, but a lot of the times going to be lining up on that side, and it will no longer be Dan Moore Jr. offering a path of resistance. It'll be Broderick Jones.
And if things do go south for him in season, would they consider a Fautanu move from right to left where they move that guy around now? Or, like, what would the long-run plan be, at least in 2025?
I don't know if they'd want to do that and disrupt Fautanu in his first year.
Right. I mean, because you just kind of did that with Jones, and
yeah,
look where we're at.
Yeah, especially since, you know, you draft Fautanu and you're basically asking him to get comfortable on the opposite side that he played at Washington. Now, I suppose there are some similarities since Michael Penix was a lefty quarterback, but for the most part, you know, the footwork is flipped, so Fautanu's a really sharp guy. You know, I think he is more nimble than your average lineman. He's going to have to be because he's also smaller than your average tackle. So I think they'd probably try to get by with a Dylan Cook or the guy who was taking the reps today, Calvin Anderson. But, yeah, I mean, it would be concerning if Broderick Jones doesn't pan out for a lot of reasons, long-term reasons and short-term reasons.
I would be concerned if that's the plan ahead. I mean, no disrespect to Cook or Anderson, but that's going to be the blindside tackle for the 1 year that Aaron Rodgers is in Pittsburgh. I mean, we're dealing with a guy that isn't the most slender of foot at this stage in his career.
Yeah, I mean, I know Arthur Smith was saying this week, I think he was talking to our Jerry Dulac, that he could still move around well, Rodgers can. But, yeah, I mean, you're not going to expect him to step up in the pocket and make you know, edge rushers miss like 26 or 27 year old Aaron Rodgers. That's just not realistic. So we know how much he's gotten the ball out of his hands quickly these last few years. You know, that can work great if you got guys who can run after the catch and everything's coming together downfield. But I think it can also really, really hamstring your offense and cap your ceiling if you don't have that explosive play in your bag. And you need protection. You need time in the pocket to, or an ability to extend plays and ad lib to get those explosives.
So I was on with Pony and Chris a couple of hours ago, and I was trying to explain that I just feel as if the fan expectation for Will Howard is a little bit unfair. I mean, the poor guy was drafted 185th overall, round six, and it just feels like there are a lot of people that are very quick to say, like, oh, I think that guy's the answer. I think he'll sit behind Aaron Rodgers. He's the answer. Like, they just feel as if it's so automatic. And, you know, I would love that if that happened. Don't get me wrong. I'm rooting for this kid to be good. He seems like a great guy. I've loved what he did in the college football playoff last year. Do you sense that, though, of, like, man, people, and you hear the crowd. I mean, the crowd erupts. The guy will complete an out route or something in the flat that's about 3 yards down the field, and we're acting as if it's the pass to Santonio Holmes in Super Bowl 43.
Yeah, I thought today he looked a little skittish, maybe for the first time in camp, and I don't know if that's just the, you know, ratcheting up the intensity today with the pads. He was also probably the last guy off the field signing autographs. So yes, all of those things are sort of genuinely earned by him with the likability quotient. Doesn't help when Big Ben's burners out here tweeting that an anonymous Steelers coach told him that Will Howard is blowing him away and that he's the next Ben Roethlisberger. Come on. So, yeah, I mean, I made the, you know, the kind of analogy when they took him, and I was like, you know, with his moxie and the intangibles and, you know, good but not great athleticism, good but not amazing size, you know, he could kind of be like a Kenny Pickett who actually has time to simmer a little bit and not have the expectations placed on him, but that's kind of out the window. He doesn't have the first round label or the he needs to start sooner rather than later label, but yeah, there are people who I think are maybe placing undue expectations on someone who, let's just be honest, if the arm talent was deemed by the NFL evaluator hive mind as being special and starter caliber, he would not have lasted that long. I think the Steelers are happy he lasted that long and were thrilled to jump on him and take him there, but even they took a fifth round you know, nose tackle or backup defensive lineman type like Y.A. Black over him. So
yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong either. Like, I don't put any of this on the player. You know, he's just simply putting his helmet on. He's going out there. He's throwing
himself.
Some passes.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm just getting the sense because Pony took what I'm saying as if I'm, like, rooting for the guy to fail. That's not the truth at all. I'm just saying let's stay on planet Earth here with what we expect the kid to do.
Yeah, especially, I mean, let's just wait and see until we get to the preseason here. I mean, how does he look when the real bullets are flying and the lights are on and, you know, guys wearing a Tampa Bay Bucks jersey can light you up or guys wearing a Jaguars jersey can chase you out of bounds and hit you. So, I you know, I'll be willing to put a little bit more stock into Will Howard and I guess assessing him as a rookie when we get to those games.
Why are the Bucks getting a random stray from Batco?
Because they play the Steelers in the preseason.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I gave you tickets to that game,
He's
Charlie.
So
how could you forget?
About his Bucks.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm going to the game.
Yeah, you better make sure you're clear that
wow,
night.
Wow, thanks, Donnie. He really appreciated that gesture. He actually completely blocked it out of his mind until this second.
No, I didn't block it out of my mind.
Charlie's going to get to enjoy those fine bleachers of Acrisure Stadium.
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be my first time.
I sit up there with the blue-collar folk in those end-zone bleachers.
He's rubbing elbows with the commoners.
Yeah, I'm going to be sitting up next to Randy Fichtner in a few years. He'll probably be in one of those seats next to me. But Howard's going to be high on those lists of, you know, like, we will do them, I'm sure, going into that first preseason game. You may do a story on it. Like, five Steelers were most excited to watch. He's going to be up there maybe behind, I don't know, Caleb Johnson?
Yeah, because you know they're going to be out there. We don't necessarily know yet if Aaron Rodgers, DK Metcalf, Jalen Ramsey, and those types will be out there. But, you know they're going to want to see it from the rookies, from some of those younger newcomers or, you know, the second lap around the track guys that Mike Tomlin likes to talk about, a couple of whom had some pretty nice performances today. Peyton Wilson was lighting dudes up in backs on backers, which was probably the highlight of the day for me.
Is that everybody's favorite drill?
I think so, because, you know, it's got the most amount of just barbaric, old-school smash-mouth hitting in it. I mean, hey, a good rule of thumb, too, when you're a beat writer covering this team, or I guess if you're a fan who makes it out here, what is Mike Tomlin watching? Because, generally speaking, the head coach is watching something that is important to him, and he's the man making the decision. So, when in doubt, lay eyes on what he's getting live and in person. Now, he's got the benefit of rewinding and scrolling back to the practice film when he goes up to his dorm at night or whatever, but he was front and center for backs on backers, and I do really enjoy hearing him bark stuff out at people. I mean, it was Jack Sawyer was going up against undrafted free agent tight end J.J. Galbraith, and I mean, Sawyer just steamrolled him, and Tomlin's like, a little resistance, please. So might not be long for old Jack is moving up in a weight class as well.
Is that his first name, Jack?
Because, Jack Sawyer.
No, I thought you meant J.J.
Oh, I don't know his first name.
Okay, because that sounds like the same name as my intern this summer.
Jack.
Very similar name.
Okay.
The last name is, it's not spelled the same, but it's like pronounced the same.
Galbraeth.
Yeah, see, my guy is Gailbraeth.
Okay, well, I mean,
I think
the Steelers one has made some nice catches in football and shorts, but yeah, I mean, he was a little bit overwhelmed today by, as you would expect, Captain Jack, national champion, Buckeyes edge rusher in the fourth round, all 6'4", 250.
He's a big man.
He is.
I met him at the Cam Hayward softball game.
A nice man,
game.
Too. A very nice man.
He is. Yeah. I asked him why he didn't go to the ESPYs, because that's where Will Howard was instead of that softball game. And he's like, honestly, I told Cam I'd be here. I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I wasn't going to take the ESPY invite. I told Cam I'd play this game. I wasn't going to go back on it.
Now, why are you putting down Will Howard again, Donnie? Now I'm with Tony. Now I think you do have an axe to grind against
this guy. He was the quarterback.
I know.
I don't care that he was there.
No, Will is definitely striking me as someone who is top-notch salt of the earth.
I liked him a lot after watching the Gruden thing with him.
And
how he, you know, how he played in the playoff. The Steelers haven't had a quarterback play like that in the playoffs in years.
Yeah.
But watching his hour chat with John Gruden, I feel like that earned him a lot of fans.
Yeah, I thought he had about as much presence, you know, for himself in those sit-downs with Gruden as really anybody, which was, you know, not easy to do. I mean, some of those guys were projected to go much higher, and yet, you know, I thought Howard was very – very authentic in that. And, I mean, I've seen that out here as well. He's been very friendly with the media, which is always good, as has Sawyer. Those guys got a lot of it last year in Columbus. But, yeah, I mean, Sawyer is somebody who I think Mike Tomlin is expecting a lot out of in these padded practices, because that's what he was brought here to do. You know, you run through a guy's face as an edge rusher and make sure we are not susceptible to the running game at outside linebacker for as long as you're a Steeler and you're on the field.
Donnie Chedrick with you live at Sharky's in Latrobe with Miller Lite. Enjoy Miller Lite happy hour specials every weekday from 4 to 6. Wing specials on Monday and Tuesday. And check out the Latrobe Meadows and Coffee, now open just behind the place here. Brian Batko.
I've been there, too. Donnie.
I was going to ask Brian. Brian Batko from the Post-Gazette with us here for the rest of this 7 o'clock hour. Have you gone to the Meadows/Coffee
yes,
spot here?
I specifically remember writing a story there last year on James Daniels, former Steelers guard. And, well, I mean, he wasn't there, but I was just writing the story there when I had some downtime, and about his affinity for the Guardian cap when he was playing here. So,
oh, yeah, he did wear one of those.
Yes, yes. And he's with the Dolphins now after he tore his Achilles last year.
Yeah, that was rough. I mean, it threw Mason McCormick into the fire, so maybe it, like, benefits the Steelers.
It's accelerated
down the road.
Accelerated the development a little bit.
Yeah,
young
I don't know. I forget what like verbiage Mike Tomlin would use in that situation.
One man's misfortune's another man's opportunity. That's exactly what he would tell you.
Anybody wearing the Guardian cap this year?
Yeah, so there were some guys who still opted to have it on today, and I saw one of them almost go flying. I guess they're strapped onto the helmet. And it's a good thing because Brandon Echols, backup cornerback who signed from the Jets this offseason as a free agent, Trey Sermon put hard hat to hard hat on Echols today in a team run drill. And, I mean, he had to be seeing some stars. Maybe it's a good thing he had the Guardian cap on, but that thing needed to be repositioned afterward because Sermon gave it to him pretty good.
You also told me to make sure that I ask you about Roman Wilson as we venture into this like battle for wide receiver two storyline, because you just said Roman Wilson is a lightning rod topic to people.
He is. I guess there's always going to be a lot of polarizing opinions on a third-round pick. There's always going to be big opinions on a third-round pick, especially a receiver, especially with the sagas that the Steelers have dealt with at that position in recent years, and especially, I mean, kind of like Will Howard and Jack Sawyer. I mean, he won the national championship the year before with Michigan. That's a winning culture thing, but it also kind of puts the bullseye on you a little bit. It's like we're expecting a lot out of you, and then a lost rookie season for him. Hey, he didn't get hurt today on the first day in pads like he did last summer, so that's a plus, but I just tweeted a video of Roman Wilson like running routes on air and catching a pass and said Roman Wilson doing Roman Wilson things. And a bunch of people watched it, liked it, retweeted it, and then probably just as many people were like, what, doing nothing, catching passes on air, running in a straight line? It just goes to show people feel a certain type of way about him, and I almost – feel bad for him that he's under such a microscope when he hasn't had a chance to actually prove anything yet.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that's really all because of last season, how the guy was on the field for, what, five or six snaps?
I think it's unfair to write the guy off as a bust already. I mean, yeah. he was hurt, and yes, the Steelers weren't itching to get him on the field once he was healthy, but maybe he wasn't ever fully healthy, or maybe they were just too far down the road with, you know, Van Jefferson and the gang and Mike Williams coming over, pour a little bit out for him in his NFL career. I don't believe Preston Smith has been scooped up by anybody either. So in case you're scoring at home on the Steelers' midseason acquisitions at the trade deadline, not looking too great for 2025.
You know what? That now sparks, I think, a pretty funny topic that could be done. Maybe I will suggest it to the guys
real time
for
here,
Friday.
I see it.
Well, okay, so we have the MLB trade deadline tomorrow, but what if we looked at the Pirates trade deadline from last season and the Steelers trade deadline from last season and the moves that each team pulled off? Like, they feel oddly, honestly, I would say the Pirates, because IKF feels like a more useful player.
Yeah.
Now, Williams had the huge moment, though.
I was going to say.
Possibly the highlight of the whole year.
I didn't fault them for the Mike Williams trade at the time. I just continued to scratch my head week after week why he wasn't getting involved and assimilated more into the offense, and I think he was too, based on the two or three times that I talked to him about it.
And why do you feel it was so difficult? I mean, did they just use like the moving train analogy?
I don't know. I mean, I guess they felt like they were already very comfortable with Van Jefferson and him doing the little things, but yeah, I mean, that was sort of strange last season. And I think maybe part of it, too, was, Williams, how much did he have left in the tank? He retired now after coming to camp with the Chargers. So it made sense at the time. It was a deep ball guy for a deep ball quarterback in Russell Wilson. It just, like a lot of things at the end of the 2024 campaign for the Steelers, it did not end well. But, yeah, with Roman Wilson, I would say, I mean, I kind of hate to really go through it with a fine-tooth comb, to use another Tomlinism. I'm not watching the All-22 of camp film, but so I don't know if he's open, if he's separating. He's had a quiet camp, frankly. I mean, a lot of the first-team wide receivers have, because I think Aaron Rodgers and the starting offense, just they haven't been that sharp. They've certainly been behind the defense. They've gotten suffocated by them a lot so far, but he's had a very quiet camp, and that's not going to quiet the critics.
And that's just natural, too. I mean, the offense being behind the defense.
Sure.
I mean, like, really every level of football, that's just kind of how it goes out of the gate. The defense always seemed to be a little bit ahead.
It was ahead in backs on backers today, too. Peyton Wilson got a lot of matchups with Kenny Gainwell. And on the first one, and Gainwell, he's like my size, Donnie. On the first one, Peyton Wilson, who's 6'4", ran him over. On the second one, Gainwell went to a well that I'm very familiar with at 5'7". He basically got very chippy and scrappy with Wilson, did not want the rep to end, kind of kept pushing and shoving him out of the end zone. He almost knocked over Ryan Shazier, who was here watching. It sort of spilled over into the onlookers because as the small guy, like, you're just the one who has to keep going until the whistle goes, and there really isn't a whistle. And then on the third one, Wilson won very easily and let Gainwell know about it. So that was a highlight from today's practice.
So would you say Peyton Wilson, the most impressive backs on backers guy day one of pads?
Yeah, Mark Robinson's also just a straight up battering ram. I can't even really remember who he beat. It might have been Evan Hall, a down the line running back that they kind of fed to the beast there. Running backs coach Eddie Faulkner wanted to call Caleb Johnson up for one more rep at the end, and he and Carson Bruner had a pretty spirited battle. A lot of the defensive guys said Caleb was holding him. But, yeah, I mean, that's what you're really getting and what you're looking for in that drill is, you know, who's kind of showing the competitive spirit and the feistiness and the chippiness that Mike Tomlin wants to see.
How did Caleb Johnson seem to hold up in his first edition of that? Because that seems to be what his big test will be. People have no issue with how he's running with the football against air, but – like, the big question is, can he be the pass blocker that Jaylen Warren is?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say Malik Harrison kind of ran through him, but Malik Harrison's got 4 years in the league, 30-some-odd starts with the Ravens as an inside linebacker, and he's 6'3", 250. He probably should be doing that to a rookie who's never been in those shoes before. So that's a work in progress for Johnson, no doubt. And he is not the bulkiest guy. I'm actually kind of surprised by his build. I guess when you see 6'1", 224 on paper, you know, you've got an image in your mind, and especially compared to, you know, some of the smaller backs that the Steelers have. And then he also is a little bit of a victim of he's replacing Najee Harris, who, say what you will about Najee, he's one of the more physically put together running backs that you're going to see this side of Derrick Henry. So Caleb Johnson, I think he's got to work on his play strength a little bit, but that goes for pretty much any rookie.
What were some of your other big takeaways, observations from first day in pads?
Kenny Gainwell, I mean, even if, you know, pass protection is not really where he's going to shine at his size, he got the ball in his hands and he juked Corey Trice out of his shoes, Donnie, and we were talking to him about it after practice a little bit and how the crowd kind of oohed and awed for that, and he's like, yeah, he said something to the effect of they're glad they're seeing it on their side now, which he was referring to that Eagles game last year where he put Dante Jackson on skates, if you remember.
I remember that play.
So, yeah, I mean, he was basically like, yeah, I'm on this side now, which is good for the Steelers. Mark Robinson, I mentioned him for backs on backers. He was blowing up run plays. Now, this is against the third-team offense. A lot of these offensive linemen, they're going to be cashing, you know, practice squad paychecks, if they're lucky, in a couple months. But Mark Robinson was flying all over the place. It looked like he was sniffing things out, diagnosing things, and it's a drill that is slanted toward you know, run defenders, but, I mean, he at least looked the part in year four when he's trying to hold off a guy like Carson Bruner.
Is Robinson a guy that's really battling for a spot? I mean, I think with the draft pick of Carson Bruner, that kind of puts Robinson, I don't know if I want to say on the chopping block, but, like, he has to show out in every single way, shape, or form, because we know that with him, he's really only on the team because of his special teams play.
Right, and he forced two fumbles last year on special teams. I mean, I guess you can say that's a little happenstance, but, hey, he made it happen. So you have to tip your cap to him for that. He was flying around out there. Deshaun Elliott was flying around out there, I thought. He's someone who I think they want to use him in some different ways. I don't know if it's because Minka's gone or if he just showed them something, obviously enough for the new contract, that they want to deploy him in some new roles. But, yeah, I mean, he came in on one – batted an Aaron Rodgers pass in seven shots. Then he came in again on a blitz a little bit later and basically rushed Rodgers' throw, which was incomplete. I don't know exactly what Rodgers' stats were today. It seemed like he was not on the same page with his pass catchers several times. You know, there was one over the middle to Jonnu Smith. We were kind of debating, you know, among the reporters on the sideline, was that a drop or was that too high? Those are the things you're trying to iron out right now in camp. And there was a DK Metcalf one too where we were conversing, you know, did he run that route right? Would that have hit him in the chest if you had run that a little bit more flat? This is exactly the kind of chemistry and rapport tweaks that you are trying to iron out in camp.
How has Jonnu Smith looked so far? Because he missed those first couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like he's no worse for the wear. I mean, I feel like he's moving around out there well today. Yeah, maybe a couple went through his hands that he would want to have back, but I don't think that's going to affect how much of a piece of the puzzle he is for this offense this year. It's almost like, you know, Arthur Smith lost a long-lost buddy in Cordero Patterson, but in comes John. It's like that meme of the guy who's holding the girl's hand and then sees the other one and is making a face. And it's like, Cordero, you're old news. Jonnu Smith is here, you know, full steam ahead.
Did Cordero kind of see that writing on the wall? I mean, he made the funny tweet.
I don't know.
It also seemed – now, I mean, you can, you know, feel free to disagree. Our buddy Mark Gabali from the Pat McAfee show, he was kind of hinting at, yeah, I don't think Patterson's hurt. He just knows he's going to get cut sometime soon and doesn't want to risk anything.
I don't need to hint at this. I mean, he didn't really practice at the beginning of last year's camp. He was on the non-football injury list, I believe. And, you know, this year in mini camp, I mean, he was kind of like a solar, you know, he was like an eclipse. We rarely saw him, but when he did, it
Haley's
was always
Comet.
Special. Yeah. And then, yeah, in training camp, he wasn't doing anything. He was in a hoodie. So I don't really know what happened there. I mean, I know he did get hurt in that game last year. I think it was probably worse than a lot of us realized, that ankle injury that he had against the Colts, I believe it was, when he was actually running pretty well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when he came back, he obviously just didn't have any juice anymore. And, you know, I don't know if he's going to play again in the NFL. He wasn't very media friendly. He didn't do a lot of interviews, but I always enjoyed like just shooting the breeze with him and making small talk. He was a pretty cool, personable guy, but his time here is over.
So I brought this up the other day, and you mentioned Deshaun Elliott making a couple of impact plays a few minutes ago, and he was one of my favorite players to watch last season.
Yeah.
He you know, whether or not he was their best defender, I don't know, but he was at least among my favorites, because he was just always finding a way to impact the game week in and week out. But my concern with the Fitzpatrick in that blockbuster deal for Jalen Ramsey, as much as we got on Minka last year for not really doing much and kind of playing center field more than anything, now with him gone, will that still give Deshaun Elliott the freedom to kind of play the way he did last season? Like, do you think they feel comfortable with Juan Thornhill and Chuck Clark potentially as the other guys back there to allow Elliott to move around?
So far, so good from what we're seeing. And yeah, I think the shift there, Donnie, that you're getting at is like they're going to want to be more dynamic and, yeah, more versatile in general on the back end. And it's almost like, if we're going to have a guy to just stand back there and keep a lid on it as the center fielder, it's going to be Juan Thornhill or Chuck Clark, who we're paying almost no money to relative to Minka. So, like, that'll still be a club in their bag, but it's not going to have to be, like, the MO all the time. And, I mean, I think with Jalen Ramsey, you know, they're going to be deploying him in all sorts of different ways that Minka either wasn't comfortable with or just simply wasn't adept at, to be quite honest. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of good for everybody. And, you know, whether it's Thornhill, whether it's Clark, I think they've both looked fine so far. You know, they have the kind of veteran savvy that you trust them back there, as long as they are not, you know, on the wrong side of 30 and getting beat down the sideline by speed demon receivers.
Is there a chance that Chuck Clark is just the Desmond King of 2025? Like, it kind of feels like that is a chance.
I actually think there's a better chance that he pushes Thornhill for the role. You know, Thornhill was here first, but Clark is here now. And I think if you would have just told me in early March, like, hey, should the Steelers sign Juan Thornhill or Chuck Clark, I don't think I would have been able to differentiate too much between those two. I mean, they're both aging free safety veteran types who were not very good on bad teams last year, but started a lot. So I think they're actually closer in quote-unquote like camp competition type stuff than Clark is to just being an afterthought. I think they actually like Chuck Clark.
How has Jalen Ramsey looked?
Good, really good. I mean, I've heard some people say, like, man, he's taller than I thought, or he's bigger than I thought. I'm like, this is why he was top five. These are the types of cornerbacks and DBs who go top five. I mean, they're just freaks of nature. The wingspan, you know, the change of direction, being able to just smother receivers. Yeah, I think he's certainly an upgrade from Minkah Fitzpatrick. I mean, I already thought he was when they made the trade, but I'm even more confident in saying that now. You know, I think one of the caveats with Ramsey is, how's he going to be personality-wise? Is he going to fit in? Is the ego portion of all of this going to align nicely for the Steelers secondary, or is that going to get thorny at some point? I don't know. A lot of that rubber doesn't meet the road until you drop a game here or there and people start you know, getting in their feelings.
Do you think they'll move him around?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, based on what we're seeing out here so far. And Darius Slay told us yesterday, yeah, he's played in the slot. He's willing to do that if they ask him to, but I think that's much more of Ramsey's cup of tea, and I think this is a team that they are going to continue to play a ton of nickel defense, but they're just going to feel better about their ability to hold up in all situations when they're in that nickel defense.
Will they move T.J. Watt around?
Yeah, I think so. They were flip-flopping him and Alex Highsmith on, I think it was the second day of camp, and that seemed like a concerted effort of, we need to have some days where we really focus in on this and see what kind of look this gives us. So I think they'll move him from right to left outside linebacker, back and forth, you know, shoot him up the middle at times to try to keep offensive linemen guessing. Yeah, I think those are all in the plans for Watt. I don't think that's just lip service when they broach those things, and especially because I think TJ himself is, you know, feeling a little bit more, you know, mere mortal, I guess, a way to put it, after the way last season ended.
Who has been your favorite player to watch so far? The early goings of camp.
Ooh. Oh, man. Favorite player to watch so far in camp. That's tough. You know, I might go with, I think Calvin Austin is really fun to watch in these environments. I mean, he's so slippery. He's so tough to keep in front of you if you're a DB. And this is, you know, if this is my kind of swan song here for the segment, Donnie, I'll leave you with this. I really liked seeing, it was just 7-on-7, so, you know, you're not really bringing people to the ground, padded or not, but Calvin Austin was going toe-to-toe with Jalen Ramsey over a coverage battle that they had. Really toe-to-neck when you talk about Calvin at 5'7 and Ramsey at 6'3, but it's the kind of guy that we saw in that Eagles game last year where he wanted the smoke from everybody out there from Philly. That didn't turn out well for the Steelers in the end, but, I mean, it just shows you the toughness that Calvin Austin has. And, yeah, I mean, I think he's embracing the expectations on him this year in camp.
Do you think he will emerge as the second wide receiver?
Yeah, I do. If I had to bet on it, I don't think the Steelers will sign another guy there. I think they will, you know, continue on with the bodies that are in the room. And, sure, maybe fans will continue to yell at Omar Khan for that until they're blue in the face, but you know, I think Calvin will be a slot receiver when he's out there, and I think that'll be his, you know, his main, you know, utilization. But, yeah, I think by the end of this season, we'll be talking about Calvin Austin having the second most wide receiver targets on the team.
Brian Batko, you hear his voice often on this station. He covers the Steelers for the Post-Gazette. Brian, thank you so much for hopping on here for, you know, about an hour, a little
thank
bit over
invite,
an hour.
Donnie,
I gave you some overtime.
I appreciate it.
And I obviously appreciate the T-shirt, Brian. It was fantastic.